Okay, I'm calling to order the Program Review Committee, and I'm going to ask Mr. Gerber to call the roll.
Mr. Capasola?
Yes.
Mr. Carrington? Mr. Ritchie is not here with us today. Mr. Bailey?
I don't know about that.
Chairperson Duncan Hall?
President.
They have the floor, Madam Chair.
We will start a coughing course in about 5 minutes. Everybody can hear you. Now, our purpose of meeting this morning is to hear from our esteemed auditor, who are going to ask to introduce themselves before we begin. So, who are you? And give a little bit of background.
Sure. My name is Brian Emmerhoff. I'm a partner at Herman Hopkins Wright Emmerhoff. We did your audit March 31, 2019, your annual audit. I have the senior manager, Sean Cedar, with Herman Hopkins, and he's the one who really did the most for me, the intro of our recently, I was at NARA in San Antonio about a month ago, and it was very, very fun time. We saw Herman, we exhibited, and we also presented. And I think a lot of the commissioners here are going to be there, and Mr. Gerber asked me to kind of take that presentation, and since we're going to be here for the board meeting after this, the audit, to just recap some of the trainings I did at NARA, and then maybe segue that in and some hands-on honor and speaker audit that we have as well. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's better.
So if it's okay, then we can just continue, and I can, okay, very good. And we have about an hour?
We've got about, I'd say, about 15 minutes for the presentation, and then we'll take a lead into about 15-minute discussion about the topic.
Yep.
And then we'll take a break at that point, and we might be able to actually do a quick report properly, and then we'll come back to the main board.
And I will say that hopefully through this presentation, when it comes to the official board meeting, that presentation will be very, very short and sweet as far as the process. So I just wanted to do some training specifically. This is unique to you guys here. And Sean will chime in. And by all means, you can ask any questions along the way. You do have a handout here in front of you, which is the PowerPoint. If you prefer to look at the paper or you prefer to look at the PowerPoint, go either way.
Okay. So Brian is also a commissioner that has an authority in Florida as well. So part of this is also, you know, giving you all things that you all need to know that are helpful to Brian. You provide a respect for how to set.
Yes, good point. As I was making audit presentations to many of our because Herman Hopkins is specializing in doing accounting. And because I'm a commissioner, a lot of the audit related stuff, the other commissioners were looking at me to give, and so I kind of agreed to certain things, and I thought this would be very helpful, and I made a presentation that our investors had as well. So, essentially, there's four key areas that board members should really focus on. I mean, obviously, there's hundreds of things you guys do, but if you can hone it in on four key areas, two of which is the HUD rule. HUD has a guidance in here that they want you to monitor FOS and CMAP. FOS and CMAP have to be reported to HUD. Congress told the Housing Authority, you have to have oversight. And they came up with FOS. FOS used to be called CMAP, just like CMAP. CMAP is Section 8. FOS is public housing. Today, that's not the question. Public housing is still rad. But the key concepts, I think, are solid. And so, in your CMAP letter you got at the end of the year, which by the way, you were 100%, it does say, I believe from the local field office, continue monitoring your CMAP throughout the year. And that's the point I want to make. I don't know if it's fair for me to tell the board with your Section 8 director here, but it makes sense to have a scorecard to report meetings of where you are on CMAP. CMAP is reported at the end of the year, but year, a board of commissioners has to look at the CMAP score, the CMAP report, and it has less than 80% accuracy. It's kind of late for you to know that. I mean, yeah, you'll find it, you'll prove it, and turn it in, but you can't effectuate change in that regard. So it just makes sense that if it's a key reporting item that HUD wants, it makes sense to oversee it. So Congress told HUD, you have to have these components overseas. It makes sense that, hey, that's what HUD is looking at upstairs. You might as well be paying attention to that. The other item, the budget, which you guys are doing a phenomenal job, and then the audit. And I'm going to, you know, kind of do these in order. I will say I took out all the bad jokes from the presentation from Nora, which is essentially all my jokes.
Oh, I was wondering about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, all the jokes are gone just because of time. That's because we have the joke. Just a joke, and you didn't know it. So, overview of some of the items here. So that's some takeaways we did from the slide. We have some extra copies as well, so you can find.
Go get your milk. Okay.
So it's just a term of definition. So when we talk about PHAS, when I use the big S, that's the big box. I think one of these ones is here. There's four components, sub-components, of what's called POPS, the Public Housing Assessment System, MAPS, and FAB. And we'll just hone in on those. So this is the physical inspection, the gas inspection. And now that it's converted to RAD, it's going to be very similar, but it's going to be somewhat different. So.
And we are required to be still submit reports to us, even though we've converted to RAD.
Well, what's going to happen with FAS? There's no additional reporting. It will pass, it doesn't. It came off the byproduct of the audit. And it's uniform financial reporting. And it, all housing authorities are held very specific reporting structure on the financial data schedule. And it's rows and columns, and it's just numbers. So they can compute numerators and denominators and get a ratio. Tenant accounts receivable as a percentage of revenues. Years ago, they would do it by peer groupings based on your size and your geographical location. So housing authorities in Florida have different issues than in the Northeast. Unions, weather, all kinds of different things. So the cost of a per unit comes. But they wanted to set a bar. They wanted to set a bar, and that's how they did it. And with asset management coming in. But the same concepts are going to hold true for RAD, although I don't have the RAD scoring methodologies. But it's going to be very simple. Occupancy, collecting the rent, paying the bills, essentially. Fiscal inspection.
And we are subject to called management and occupancy review under the project management program. And it goes through all essentially all of those people.
When you started talking about the writers and the numbers, how much of this, I mean, it's fine for us to have an understanding of what that does, but this is not what I'm trying to do.
Right.
This is what our staff is trying to do. And if they all come and tell us either there's a problem or not, how much more is it going to do I need to get?
You don't. You don't. you know, so numerator and denominator is really just saying, okay, what's the, for occupancy, what's the ratio of units leased to units available? That's all. There's an upstairs number and downstairs number.
I make teams and algebra. I drop accounting, I drop tax.
The fees over. Operate first came out of Fonz, I think I have a slide on it, but it's called Fonz 4. And when it first came out in like March or May to be effective for that March year end. And housing authorities, I don't know if anyone knows Jerome Ryan, the head of housing authorities, he's a big guy with a bold voice, and he's yelling at HUD, how can you come out with rules? Sounds like you go, it's not fair you come out with something after the fact and grade us on for the previous 12 months. And he's right. He's right. And we can join that bandwagon, that, you know, of the anti-HUD or whatever. But it's really occupancy. It's things that you would have been doing anyway. Collecting your rents, paying your bills, and leaving your unit. It's not like they went over the top. They actually downgraded what used to be final bond 3, the interim boss 4, and there's no additional reporting, there's no additional auditing, it just comes right off that financial task.
And I think while this presentation is a little long today, Brian's going to quickly through it. I think he's going to say, here's something that you don't want to be asking your staff about. Here's a vision. Here's a vision. You're never going to be asked to do a ratio.
Right.
You're going to say, you know, based on how you're progressing on lease-up and utilization of your half-doctors and Lisa doing a ban on CMAP scores. So
we'll do that.
You'll be able to ask a big question.
I'll try and keep it in perspective and keep staying on time. So here's some definitions for you. This is going to be the GASI, right, the government accounting standards, and we use the terminology GAAP. And everyone here should know about the Real Estate Assessment Center. That's the one that has to approve your audit at the end of the year. And then there's the financial data that everyone loves. I did want to point out that it used to be HUD guidance was considered GAAP. If it was prevalent, this is old. If you look at the top right, GAAP hierarchy is old. In the old hierarchy, there was a level 4, widely recognized in government practice. Yeah. So when HUD needs to approve your audit, react, and they say, no, we want you to do it this way. It can't be because of the field office. It has to be because of the gap. It has to be because of the gap. They took that out. And the current is just these two categories of gap. And the house authority has to follow the same accounting structure. They don't write these gaps specifically for housing authorities. They write for all governments. So we have to keep that in check. In addition to the audit being several audit standards, we also have to follow HUD programmatic reporting requirements. Budgeting is the first key area. Two aspects. If we approve the budget at the end of the year, then there's the monitoring throughout the year. If you spend more time at the beginning of the year, preparing the budget, you should be able to spend less time in your money rooms analyzing the budget to actual. And there you go. Measure twice and cut once. When I do this at NARA, there's always a comment. Really, you need to cut twice, cut three times, because cut budgets and throw the cutting budgets, which is another joke. It's sadly true. So it's like, you're doing carpentry or you're doing, dresses with a sewing machine, cutting fabric. Measure twice before you cut it. So looking at the budget, you spend more time in the beginning of the year, you should spend less time on the oversight. I have all kinds of slides that go into the budget details. You want actual numbers, you want the numbers that are going to be next year, you want to know all kinds of cost of health, cost of labor. But really, the strategic plan is really something that might get missed. You're looking at last year, and you're raising it for cost optimization. But really, you're looking at your strategic initiatives. Do you need to upgrade your accounting system? Do you need to upgrade your attendance system? You're converting the RAD, your staff need to go to training. What's your five-year plan? What's your strategic plan? Any new initiatives? Staff turnover. Obviously, if something's going on with the Boston Affordable, and they could get $1 million of unrestricted money to make a down payment on a property like this, all of that is key. Where you want to go, the direction you want to go, and you want to go. Staff turnover and career development. New goals and objectives. You just have to think about that, and I know that you guys are doing a good job here. I do want to point out that if you don't collect your tenant accounts receivable, it's a bad debt expense. and that that cash flow, it's also a ratio used in the bond, but if you don't collect the money, you can't spend it. It might be forecasted in the original budget at the beginning of the year, but if there's a bad day, we recognize revenue and our tenants are there, then hopefully we can collect the rents after the fact. And if we don't collect them all, there's always a percentage of that debt.
Well, our bad debt expense report came to us last month.
Yes.
So we do know that kind of.
You do now?
It's semi-annual.
Yeah. It's a HUD rule that the boards approve the write-offs and disposals. And it's really a theft. It's an abuse, fraud type of thing because of the employee can just write it off and collect the money.
Yeah, we don't need so much
control. Okay. HUD monitors, transfers, and borrowing. Each federal program should be individually sustainable to the extent it can. You obviously can't take Section 8 money and give it to another program. Now, affordable housing, SHCC, that's really unrestricted. You can do transfers there across your entities. It's just, if it's a federally funded program, it's got to be used for that purpose. HUD is really cracking down on transfers and borrowing across months. This is where the top-side approach, you could go into the minutia if you wanted to. We call it the general ledger detail, but you should just be looking at maintenance on the top side. You know, you don't need to be looking at maintenance, plumbing, electrical, things of that nature. And you can do it all sites or some individual sites, but it's up to you. If you spend more time in the beginning, the monthly meeting should be a lot faster than the budget. And that's minutia, believe it or not, I think that's what happens. Not necessarily the general ledger detail or the minutia. You know, some board members don't want to get the weeds. Measure twice, cut once, spending some extra time on preparing, and we give you less discussion on variances. A good example would be travel. If you say, okay, based on our size and based on our initiatives, 25,000 for NARO conferences and so many commissioners in Nevada, then every travel every month doesn't need to be analyzed as long as you're within the budget within the 25. But when you're exceeded and maybe by a certain percentage, then Martha should explain to you or someone in finance should present it as a deviation from the budget.
Are there any HUD guidelines on how much money that agency should spend on HUD?
You know, there's no guideline that I'm aware of. If the question is, what would the newspaper say?
That's always been my final result.
But you
that's
have.
I don't have a problem legally or otherwise. I just wonder if the board is beyond the board.
If every board member goes to every conference, that might be a problem. Okay. If staff go to help board members, you know, logistics, you know, every conference, that could be a problem. But it's reasonable and necessary, and that's the right problem. And you guys have a lot of unrestricted funds that even if funds question you, you can just. Now, if Section 8 is doing a training, it's a Section 8 charge. It's the front line of Section 8. But other things, other workshops, if it's above and beyond the normal budget, you can always use some alternative funds.
Where can we get the funds to grow? All of our non-self-help.
Right.
Yeah. So I think we just generally kept that thing, but we've also scaled back our travel. So generally we've used a rule of 2 to 3 trips per commissioner per year sounds about right. We don't, I think there's a point where we send a whole lot of folks to our conferences now we send fewer based on, you know, are they involved in committees? You know, we do a session, we also do look at who can, you know, go get training and come back and teach others. So we use that training trainer model. So we've cut back that a bit. I mean, the big outlier has, of course, been, you know, Carl traveled because of physical problems. But no, that has come to an end, so I think we're good.
No, we're not using federal.
We're not using federal.
So a newspaper, if there's no other hot topics and they have, you know, kind of a bug that they're trying to get to, I've actually had a newspaper reporter follow one of our clients to a training and reported on how it was kind of like abuse because the commissioners, the training wasn't top-notch lot of jokes and a lot of acronyms, and, you know, because they're volunteers like me. There's no certificate. And it was a different time zone, so commissioners have their own businesses. You might have missed a session, or maybe they were breakout sessions. But the newspaper reported they missed this class, and it cost this much, and here's a leaky roof that they didn't fix, and taxpayer dollars. But it was once in 25 years. And, you know, don't operate because of that. You know, you have to think your mind. And that's just an example. But you don't need to approve each and every conference as long as you're in budget, you know, because you spent time at the beginning of the year. The whole point of this is expedite the board meetings and focus on the big thing. As far as the audit goes, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that, Sean and I come in after the fact. You can rely on what we're doing, but we're not part of your internal control. We're your external independent auditors. We're giving an opinion. Your internal control system, let's say, for example, CMAP from HUD is no longer required. I would still want you, and board members, you will still want your staff to be doing the quality control check in those regards to those compliance attributes. It's a necessary evil, but it serves a very good purpose. And so we come in after the fact. We're not part of your internal control system. So you need to have comfort on the internal processes. Auditors are concerned with only certain items. We're doing it for multiple reasons, multiple standards, and we have to meet those standards. Hopefully, we're accomplishing your needs as well. And Sean will give you a list of what we're testing here that I think is a pretty large gamut. And a lot of it, in our judgment, a lot of it is straight up required, but we use our risk on that judgment. Directed material. This is important. Directed material. So we don't have to look at everything. We're only looking at things that are directed materials to the financial statements. The audit opinion actually says reasonable assurance that it's free of material in the statement. So we're not looking at everything. Sample and standard-based approach. When we look at your financial report, there's an MD&A written by management, and precursor. I would encourage you to read that when you get the audit. It's the layman's version of the whole thing for the year compared to last year. Major variances. As an executive summary, you don't have to go into all the numbers. These are all the numbers that you're required to do, and I mentioned to staff earlier that this is in accordance with the AICPA audit standards that every audit needs to have. The basic statements and the notes. This is because of the HUD requirements for the field office. We're doing certain schedules required by HUD, and then this is because of federal funds at the housing authority level. This is really the focus is, if you had just 5 minutes to read one page of the audit, it would be the schedule of findings and question costs, because it gives you a recap of our opinions over the whole thing. And it's near the back of the audit. And essentially, it's called the schedule of findings and question costs, even if you don't have any funds. They still have to do it and say none reported or no.
What is the Yellow Book Report?
The Yellow Book Report is a government audit standard. I should have defined that. Because you're a government, we're going to test a certain amount of controls and compliance, and we're going to give you a report on it. Okay? Fiduciary responsibility, stewardship over taxpayer dollars, government audit standards. This is written by the American Institute of CPAs for all audits. Commercial audit, a for-profit audit, maybe there's earnings per share, things of that nature. This is because you're a government. So we're testing the controls over financial reporting, and it's required. Here is optional. Here, instead of vouching and picking and tying every number, we can test controls, and you can reduce our sustained testing. But over here, we do have to look at the compliance controls. Are your cash collateralized? Things of that nature.
I was just curious about that schedule of findings and question costs. It's on page 77 of the audit.
Very good, yeah.
Right next to the head, it runs into the findings.
I'm going to just skip most of this stuff, but there's the term gap, generally accepted accounting principles, and that's full of one of the reports in the audit is non full accrual and cash basis. Cash in and cash out. And I do want to talk about the implication that we have. It's on the gap basis. And that gap basis is going to dictate when you get a grant and you make a loan with it, it's a positive push to your net position. Your net position can go up. If you got $10 million and you made a loan to a tax credit partner, you could have a $10 million note receivable, and that increases your net position. But that's not indicating profit in this year. And we don't want the newspaper to see that. We don't want them here indeed using the term net income, surplus, profit. It's simply called a change in net position. It's an upward change. But over time, depreciation is going to eat that away. Depreciation is a non-cash flow expense, and when we get into your financials, we'll see that. And then the benefit of cash flow, just cash basis, it's easier to follow. Cash in, cash out. Who do we pay and what do we collect? These are the things I was going to mention when Sean elaborated on. This is what we consider direct and material. And I just want to point out that when we get to employee files, we're not going to go through the employee files to look at drug tests and background checks and driver's license if they have a car. We're just simply looking there for wages. What was that person supposed to be making X dollars per hour? And then we do that as it relates to our payroll test. Here's a paycheck for that person. Here's a time ticket for that person. They should be getting X dollars per hour. Let's check the personnel files and make sure that's what they're supposed to get.
Now, if you're looking at wages, are you examining those wages against the general amount of money for that category of employees?
No. That's what they were approved to get paid. Mm-hmm. It's not for us to question, but somewhere in the staff review process and the approval process, that's what they were supposed to be paid. Hopefully that qualifies back to your budget.
Management
yes. That agreed upon procedure specific to that? Sure. But because we have to follow so many standards as it relates to the numbers, we don't go into a lot of the detail. For example, there's so many rules, right? Do you have a poster by your break room for workers' comp? Do you, is the W-2s personal usage? Is it income? If you have a company vehicle or a personal use of a phone or a car, it should be income on a W-2. But those are things we're not going to look at because it's not really relevant to the financial statements, the numbers and the things. So it's kind of a fine line. But these are the procurement files that all your vendors go through. You certainly pour through the selection committee's recommendations or significant costs, such as the Furman Hawkins was approved through the procurement process. Disbursements, AP, payroll, and HAP. HAP is the housing system payment. Employee files, you mentioned that. And if it's a housing voucher program, I mean, that has so many compliance attributes. We're looking at waiting lists, tenant files, CNAP, inspections, intercompany borrowings. The voucher management system needs to reconcile with the financial data schedule. Two different reporting systems for HUD, they should agree. They don't need to be exact. There's tiny differences and cruel differences, but they should come close. Tenant recertification maintenance, and then it's different based on what you made a program in any given year. Different programs. And Sean can talk about it, but we had a clean bill of health in all of these areas, except for some journal entries that we have to do before the audit process. Sean, anything you want to add?
I don't know, this year when we mentioned wages, you might have been thinking every couple of years we'll do a salary survey.
Yeah.
So we're a little overdue. That's kind of.
Yeah.
So auditors, we provide a level of assurance. However, we are external, we're not part of the normal controls. And we test on a sample basis looking for reasonable assurance. And it's a risk-based approach. All right. FOG has these two indicators. We're going to go a little fast here, but bond is no longer relevant if you convert it to RAB, but if you look at Matthew's hand, we're going to get into some details here. This is the point of assessment. You got all 25 points last year on this math and on this SAS. Actually, for a couple of years running, right? It's not really relevant as we look at that chart. The audit review process is simply unaudited. How do you recap it? How do you review it? And then you get scored. We do not involve directly, but indirectly, we want to participate in the unaudited submission to make sure that they make sure that first draft. But we're not in here looking at bank recs and cash. At that point, we're just looking at the presentation of numbers to make sure intercompany borrowings, there's no red flags, to make sure eliminations eliminate, and so forth and so on. We try, Berman Hopkins tries to get involved in the unaudited process to avoid rejection items down here. This is the audit process, and we have to approve it. This is us right here. We have to approve it. And so the final audit gets submitted, and then we agree to our records to make sure that clients don't change anything when they submit it. And the boss, this is just the background, but this is essentially what it said. The secretary shall develop, this is from 1937, the secretary shall develop and publish in the Federal Register indicators to assess management performance of public housing. Such indicators shall enable the secretary to evaluate performance on all major areas of management operations. And that's what a lot of the score is. But the reason is, the reason I still kept it, even though PAWS is not going to be relevant in the future, is they're giving you a 10% error rate here on any one. This is the composite score, but individual scores, you need 60 in total, or overall 90. Standard is at least 60. Substandard is less than 60. So you really got to be in bad shape to get on a red flag as it relates to this. And these are just some numbers. We talked about numerators and denominators. I just wanted to give it to you. But essentially, it's a quick ratio. It measures your liquidity, months expendable, equity. What do you have in reserves? And can you pay that service on time? Very simple, very easy. If we have audit findings or audit adjustments or anything like that, you could lose some points in your scoring. But again, it's not really going to be relevant to you, but it, the whole audit got impacted in the FOB score. Now, this is MAPS. MAPS is really three sub-indicators: occupancy, tenant accounts receivable, and accounts payable. Very simple. Turn your units, lease them up, collect your rents, and pay your bills. Not hard. They couldn't have made it any easier. All right, and then CMAP. This is due within 50 days after your end. And I just wanted to show you the first six. Okay, there's 14 in CMAP, and you have it in your handout, a whole CMAP form. And you have got 100 points. We tested it. We verified it this year. But I would like to point out that it's something that you might want to get on a, if not a monthly basis, maybe a quarterly basis, if it's feasible. And in the letter that Hud gave you, I mentioned, it says, monitor it throughout the year. So, no extra work for staff. They're working hard. I don't want to make that recommendation, but if they could give you a scorecard, I think that would be great.
I didn't want to talk about pieces of that in your report.
Oh, we can start. Okay.
We can sweep Lisa's report to include those elements. As you know, she's got 100 every year, except sometimes 104 if we get the bonus. And except for 1 year, we got 96. So, it's, I mean, it's an area that we're welcoming.
But the over
100
refers to the opportunity.
It's that bonus, that deconcentration bonus.
So, the wait list is really saying a couple of things. And I'm just going to stick with instead of going all the way through it. But the wait list is really saying, are people at the top of the list given the opportunity to be given a voucher? And then the people that were given vouchers came from the list, right? So it's a two-way test. Reasonable rent. We want to make sure that the rents in the marketplace are reasonable, even though it's within our FMRs, fair market rents, or our payment standards, that the unit is not decrepit and it should be left in part. It's amenities and comparability to the landlord, the new landlord, and it's like, okay, well, let's compare it to other comparables, and other comparables are usually going for $1,100, maybe $1,200, not right. Or other comparables are $1,400, we like $1,200, it's within the parameters of the new rugs, new carpets, new appliances, well, rugs. Adjusted income, this is a big one. This is what we test as well. Adjusted income is the tenant payment. It's everything involved in what the tenant pays versus our half. It's a recertification process that encompasses the family composition, the medical expenses, the dependencies, and the income level. And it says, oh, that tenant should be able to pay $225. Well, the rent's $1,200, so we're kicking in the $975. Very important because it impacts your subsidy, it impacts the benefits of the tenants, and we test it as well as direct material outside of it being in the income. And I'll get to a slide a little bit later, but there's an error. You can say yes to the first quadrant of this, and it's in your handout. You can all go to your handouts for me. So if you've seen that page, it's in here as well. See number three, how it's at least 90%?
Mm-hmm.
Right here. It's giving you a 10% error rate to get all your points. So HUD has an inherent 10% error rate. So even the RAT, which I think the deficit will apply, you saw it on public housing as well. So that's a pretty good margin of error, I think, to get all your points there. Of course, internally, you might want to shoot for something better. Does that mean 10% of your tenants can be earned? You know, you could be 98 or you could be 91 and you're still good. But you want to shape for something internally a little bit better. Utility allowances, this is just didn't do a study, and are utility allowance adjusted if there's a change in utility rates, and that impacts the tenant subsidy as well. And HQF is housing quality, and this is inspection. This right here, quality control, re-inspection of a recent inspection to make sure the first inspector did a good job. We have to do it within a reasonable period of time, which ironically on the HUD form says within a reasonable period of time. It doesn't give you the time frame. Recently completed, well, later on in the guidance, and I have a couple slides on it, it will explain how that's 90 days. Well, why don't they just put it on the form? Because a lot of people are going to get it wrong. They're going to go out September once a year and do all inspections. The problem is if you re-inspect a unit beyond 2 weeks of the first inspection, a lot can happen in that unit. If you're trying to verify the validity of the first inspector, and you go out there and a lot can happen, you're like, oh no, this was a fail. First inspector could be like, it was good amount there. A lot can happen in 3 weeks. But you can see the trends. Is it an inspector? Is it only getting a no after he said yes? It really failed after the first inspector was yes. And that has to be throughout the year, throughout inspectors, and throughout the demographics of your population.
And I think everyone knows that Lisa has a core of inspectors. It's, how many inspectors do you have, Lisa?
Eight.
And they go to Section 8 of the relative property, looking for the issues that we ultimately are graded on through CMAP. I think it's also important to note that HQS is the lowest standard of HUD inspection. So it's looking at what's really safe and decent. It's not the UPS inspection level, which is a much higher level of inspection that we're subject to in our RAD housing and our former public housing. We have very different levels, much less intense. One's quite straightforward, quick inspection, and the UPS is much more involved.
And that's a very good point. You know, the mission of the housing authority is to provide safe, and sanitary housing. So we in the Section 8 program, we don't own those properties. It's outside landlords. And we have to make sure they're not taking advantage of our tenants, our voucher holders. So the quality control of our inspectors is number five. Number six is enforcement. If we have a failed inspection, we give the landlord a certain amount of time, and we have to go out there and re-inspect. If it's not corrected, we have to stop paying the landlord until they correct it. A lot of Florida, how there's not a lot of units for voucher holders coming off the waiting list to find a unit. You kind of need landlords, but you have to work with them and make sure that the properties are maintained.
So, okay.
Yes.
Do you find that the private owners at a SNA, is that one of the reasons they don't like to get SNA residents or vouchers? Because they have to keep up with it?
I think there's an issue with landlords nowadays when the government shut down. And there was risk they might not get paid their rent from the government on the first month. If I owned a house, because that's what it would be. It would be like you and me owning an extra house to rent to someone. I would be totally confident. I'd be totally on board with it. It's all about housing for you. But a typical landlord might not want to do it. There's the, you know, housing where you pay for additional stuff. But you're guaranteed rent, or two-thirds, you know, instead of 10.
We were very concerned. HUD said they loaded up about 2 months worth of rent in the system. So we felt if this thing went on for more than about a month, we were going to be a month and a half, we were going to be much more anxious about it.
All right. Now, another question I have, given the fact that we have removed a two-category housing, there's the RAD conversion versus the other properties that are affordable housing, how does that affect our reviews, or does it?
So there's really three. So there's the assisted housing, which is created by CMAL, the MISA program.
Right.
Then there's the former public housing that's now RAD, right. And that's been evaluated by that program and MISA program were evaluated by Burton Hopkins. And then there's Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, which brings in all those properties as well. So you want to maybe talk about that?
Well, when we do the audit, we have to determine the funding. And there's a schedule that will show you as part of the audit when we get to that presentation. Your Section 8 program is large, very large. You will always be testing HCB as a major. Public housing was as well, but it was clean and in the air when I rotated. Now we're testing it under RAD, under subsidies, based on the subsidy level. And RAD would get tested by us every second or third year, not every year. HCB would be every year because the risk assessment is that large. Affordable housing, we never have to test compliance on. It's just numbers. Because it's affordable. So Austin Affordable is not regulated by funding of the government mechanism. It has individual partnership audits that's being audited on those individual apartments. You also have business activities. For example, this property here, it will be a Section 8 voucher if you come here, but we're testing them. This is like a private landlord in your Section 8 program that can come. But we're testing them as a Section 8 in your ACB program.
So this is
not confusing anymore.
Well, yes.
Well, maybe we can.
I think I get the concept.
This is certainly the biggest overall audit,
right,
viewing all the blended component parts of HACA. This covers the HACAverse, if you
yeah.
will.
But there's no compliance attributes on the affordable housing side. It's just strictly rent. It's owned by a nonprofit, but it's almost like for-profit, and that it's just rent collections. There's no compliance attributes. We don't have to look at those kind of files.
Okay.
From our perspective.
Does one of them make
that
the other
ones?
On business activity
for the housing? No, not really. No, but the portfolio does receive inspection and file audits through our lenders and investors.
Okay, that's the other piece of it.
You're right. And through Texas Department of Housing, through the affairs of those bonds or tax credits associated with those transactions, but they're
does that require more auditing than
absolutely.
Yes. Much more.
And oftentimes there's a you've heard of there's another accounting firm, Novogradac, which is involved in Cohn-Resnick. Both firms are involved in specific deals where there'll be the designated auditor coming in just looking at that component part of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So
we also get physical inspection too.
is exemption for black purpose.
I guess what I'm trying to find out, is it more tourism now that we have this separate category?
Perhaps. It is what we're trying to
identify.
We think
so. Does that feel simpler?
Now, originally, we felt that all of your separate RAF properties needed their own elements, but we're just combining them all into the housing for you. As if it was public housing, it's now this RAF, but even when it was public housing, they didn't have their own individual audits. It was audited as part of the audit.
So, if you look at the holding company and all of
I don't think the holding company is the right term. I think we, HUD uses the terms instrumentality and affiliates. GASD uses the terms blended component units or discrete component units. In some regards, it could be a related party, which is not in your reporting structure. But because you have significant ownership, for example, this board owns the rent SHCC pathways, housing pathways, and affordable housing.
And as long as we don't use that any federal money, what business is there to us?
Exactly. That's why when you travel, you use the other funding on the street.
So then, and I'm sorry, I stepped out. And maybe this is what you were asking. Is this audit a universal audit?
The audit that we're doing is the housing authority in its entirety, all reporting entities under it that it owns. So it's comprehensive. So SHCC is in the Austin
Affordable
Housing. Is in it.
Are any of ours holding nonprofits? No.
They all are. Unless you're a 0.01 owner in one of the tax credit deals, someone else owns it 99%, we're not saying we own it.
We're not reporting it.
I'm sorry?
We don't have any of those other deals.
We're 99% of the ownership of the tax credit investor.
No, I understand, but ultimately, we're the...
That ultimately, at some point, we will become the full owner of those down the road.
Yeah. And those are subject to annual audits as well. Yeah, those are the ones done by Governor Gradach and by Resnick.
Connor Resnick and
others.
And Berman Hopkins does a lot of those audits as well. Not any of your tax credits, but we do other tax credits. And there are reporting requirements that are from the investors. It's got to be done within 2.5 months, then a draft tax return, and a quick turnaround, but it's just an apartment complex. So it's just revenue, maintenance expense, and operating. You know, so it's pretty straight up. There's not a lot of compliance tax returns.
But that's not really reporting off a lot of information to you all on the back of the board book about what's happening in those properties, inventory, cash flows, issues that we may be having, number of voucher holders, and why we may have put it into this more simpler management tool for you to stream along as well to be able to follow what's happening there if that portfolio gets bigger.
And all of those products that are in addition to our universal products are provided for contractual deficit.
Yeah, oh, yes.
What was the last time you
contractual? That we have to have
all the contractual.
Because they even through the contract with the developer or investors, or maybe with the state.
There's not a provision of the building and capital stack, different provisions on the use of money.
In the audit of each one of those limited partnership audits, the co-resident does, the non-product is charged for that program. You're not absorbing that in your.
And let me just say, just be authentic. Everything's up there. Now that we've gone into placing a reserve for replacement, and we have a partner, say for example, Royal Bank of Canada, which is invested at Shadowbend, we go and we have a conversation with RBC about we had a conversation about new roofs that we could put in following hail damage and some leaks that we had, and it led to an audit and a look at how that money was to be spent in looking at looking at the whole plan for Shadowbend. So every expenditure is now being looked at. We've built in an awful lot of controls and process to make sure that we're using the dollars that we set aside well, and that there's not being spent on what it needs to be spent on.
What I call external. and they create findings and our internal auditor can't leave them in the wrong term. I'm talking about now the auditors, like space, et cetera, setting for these properties. Can they create findings and do they have certain controls over us?
They can't create findings. They could take us, they do have options to affect our involvement in the partnership, and they could also just stop and not authorize the use of those funds.
Okay.
In the case of shadow ban, we had a couple weeks away because of questions.
I apologize.
So investors also keep an eye on the property so that they're up to par.
So this is just a quick point of something in CMAP that's a little bit confusing, and this is part of the frustration that auditors as well as your staff have to share in. So this is the HUD form, the actual form of CMAP, and this is number 5 on quality control inspections. And it says a qualified person reinspected a sample of units during the fiscal year, which met the minimum sample requirements. The quality control sample, let's see, they reinspected a sample that was drawn from recently completed. It's a cross-section of neighborhoods and cross-section of inspectors. And it's just yes or no. What if it wasn't recently completed, but it was a cross-section of inspectors? What if it wasn't a cross-section of neighborhoods, but it was a cross, you know, it's yes or no, and you're only going to get 5 points for this. So you could say no and not care. Ironically, for the purposes of CMAP. But above and beyond, you want to do the right thing. Now, I'm going to show you on the next slide a different book. This is recently completed, meaning 90 days, no older than 3 months. But this is for another document in the voucher guidebook. One thing just changed that form. This form is from 2000. And then somewhere else, I think it's, this is in the CFR, actually, the Code of Federal Regulations, recently completed. And then it says IE, which is really, in essence, not example given, but a lot of people don't know that. Oh, 3 months. So if an executive director of a small agency was just looking at the form, they'd be like, recently completed, okay, once a year. I'm going to go out in September, I'm going to do it for the full year. Well, guess what? No. And then all of her real inspections had different answers on the re-inspection. But you're not going to know that Inspector A is having a lot of passes that were in sales. So you got to get out there. I would say 90 days is too long. If you can get out there within 3 weeks, it's even better because it's more effective. You're trying to validate the validity of the first inspection. You can't do that if you go out 8 months later. But again, the CFR has this. This handbook has this. And the form just this recently. But it references you to some guidance. And it's just part of the indication of where HUD is and why there's a lot of discombobulation or miscommunication. Mm-hmm. So, yep. Alright, so we already talked about all of that. This is the guidebook. A lot of references there, and we are done on this. Show me to the last slide. No escape on that. But it's just a recap. I'm not sure because it's a little longer. But essentially, you can actually not even do it for me. Essentially, budget. Pay more attention in the beginning. It should save you less time. Budget tax. The audit, we're testing a lot of things that you should feel comfortable with covering, but we come in after the fact, and we're not part of your internal process. Now, I say that, your staff know that they can call us anytime. You're rather buy off on something. You got a new contract, you got a new lease, there's a new GASB coming up, there's a new HUD rule. Certainly, you can call us throughout the year. This is a partnership with us. We are independent, but we can certainly consult how things are independent, and we want to make sure it's right before we come in after the fact. But technically, we come in after the fact. And then CMAP is huge, and we'll look for things on RAD, like FOSS, on those key indicators. So I'm sure you're already getting it. Write-offs, occupancy, things of that nature. I know you're going to have money to pay for those. It's really fundamental and rudimentary for a lot of agencies and our institutions. All right, very good. Does anyone have any questions on anything?
I've got a couple. At the beginning, you said this is the same one.
Yes.
Do you ever go in various programs and do that in detail?
Yeah.
Or is everything set?
Yeah, no, like all the bank wraps, all the cash at the end of the year. Everything on the balance sheet is pretty much confirmed at the end of the year, and that's the balance. The balance sheet is what you own and what you owe at that point in time. We know you continue to operate, but as of your fiscal year end, that's the point we need to take that snapshot. So we're really substantially supporting the balance sheet.
And the second thing that you said about that, we were talking about all the nonprofits, all the things that we don't use money for our charity. When we first started doing this,
someone else on the team, but ultimately it will be borne by the property.
Now, that includes your bedding project and your deep diligence when you're looking at these properties?
So that would be done by Ron and Suzanne?
I know who Ron and Suzanne report for.
Who they report to? They're for Suzanne.
I know, but who they work for.
Oh, they work for Howard.
That's what I'm talking about. Is there a counting mechanism that we need to be using?
Anything is possible. For example, let's say you're short staffed on a different department, and SHCP is having a slow, Southwest is having a slow month. Certainly, maybe Martha can use those individuals to help on accounting, and she can make that allocation happen and not be charged over here and be charged over here.
Now that we're moving away from public health and grad, does it make much difference?
It does, and it's unique because a lot of grad, straight grad is different, but again, you have ratios that you need to maintain. So you don't want to overcharge anything, and but then again, you don't want to not charge it and eat it in your COCC because that's using your funds. So we're down to Martha's on top of it. We've talked about it.
The waters of that surge.
We feel very comfortable.
It's an issue that I have brought up in a decade, I guess.
But keep in mind, sir, that we're reporting the Austin Housing Authority audit is all inclusive of this blended component unit and one number, and we're looking at it top side. So the individual allocations are not really an individual opinion unit that we're getting anything on. A partnership, tax credit partnership, sure, is going to have an audit. SHCC has an audit. Austin Affordable, we talked about that. So there's like five audits, there's a blueprint, and et cetera, standalone. But everything else is really rolling up.
Well, if y'all just from the top side and don't really get down into it, should we have some other audits on that issue?
Well, we build up to that. We're doing the individual audits, and we're rolling up.
So in your opinion, we're going to cover it?
Yes.
And I don't mean to cover legally, I just cover the platform also.
Absolutely. If I had any concern or any risk, I would say, hey, let's modify our contract, you should have this or something. Your issue.
Yes, I'm fine.
And I think you want to do it forward, or do you want to talk about your audit finding?
What the time that you want to find maybe real fast, and then you can go take a quick tour while there's some shuffling around, we have a bunch in here, and you come back, we'll talk more about the audit. I think this test generally on the audit.
Yeah. So the audit is going to be based on the AICPA audit standards. If it was a non-profit or for-profit, without government. Then we go up a click because your government needs the government audit yellow book. These are being printed in yellow. And that requires us to have independence and better CPE, better audit documentation, staff review, things of that nature. And that's simply because your government agency we test controls and compliance, and we do a report. Then you get federal funds, and we test compliance in that regard. So you have no issues with Section 8. You have no issues with the new RAB properties that we tested. We have no issues with approvals and compliance with the financial statements. But we didn't have a lot of journal entries. And HUD can see the unaudited submission and compare it to the audited submission. And there was a lot of significant adjustments. Whether the accounting department right at your end was overstaffed with other items or understaffed, I mean overstaffed, overtasked with other items and understaffed at that 60-day window, but your year end, between 60 days, you have to close. That same 60 days is a small agency as well as large agency. And not only are you large, you're complex. With all of the partnership agreements and RAB conversion and the future. So I think a combination of staff leaving, the new budget process in place for fiscal year end changes, some things got missed. I don't think it's a big deal in that sense. It is a finding that we have to report, but it's at that lower tier finding. It's at the normal audit standards. HUD should not make a big deal out of it. It wasn't a compliance attribute related to tenants. It didn't have to do with the landlord, it didn't have to do with the payroll, no money was missing. It was just accounting presentation. And the audit standards are pretty clear in that regard, and Sean and I see it, you know, maybe with
three times a year, four times a year, and all of our agencies. I think it's tolerable. I know, as me as a board member, I would be okay with it. But it's a cost benefit. You could have hired three more people in your accounting department or outside consultants for X dollars, but you're trying to do the best you can with what you have.
Tell me what the fine is.
Journal entries related to the closing books. The unaudited FDS needed audit adjustments to be presented in accordance with government accounting.
So is it just a bookkeeping?
Exactly.
Sloppy bookkeeping?
I wouldn't use that term. I wouldn't use that. Wasn't impacting landlords'
commercial infrastructure in Austin has been through high growth, high change. So it isn't unexpected, but it is a certain very passionate kind of been there, done that, and we have plans.
And for a team that's not used to dealing with quantifying, something that also, it's not happy to move, it's just going back to the worst thing we've had to deal with, there were plenty years ago. Just context, when I inherited TDHA from Glenna, I think when you inherited TDHA from your predecessor, there was a pretty sizable stack of audit findings. It went from about this, to what it came to be to about this, and there's two things that I think are really important. One is you keep working on and addressing these issues. Luckily, this is a set of issues that's very interesting. A lot of times they're not requires any major changes to how work gets done in an agency. So fortunately, we're not talking about those kinds of things, but. It's persistence and organizational commitment, management commitment to addressing them. The second piece of it is, and I'm sure the team, is that the auditors take great pride in their partnership but they work for you. Their job is to review the numbers and we may go back and talk to them about, hey, did you see this data points. Our job is to fully disclose, it's a prerequisite of anyone that is to fully disclose, and they're the umpire, they call it, and they call this, it's more than fair, and they've identified other, things that we as management will work on, and as well, and every year before this meeting, they come and they do a download of an hour's worth of other things that, we think about. So we very fair, and we're going to be more into this. And I think as we improve our internal controls policy, I think you'll see that come back to the board. It's not a board issue, but I have to say we should report out to you on it. We should have that with you. But it's not something that affects SACC. The content group did it. It's not something that affects how we work with AHC and partnerships that we want to enter into. It's really calling it out at the right level to call management to go take care of this. The reasons it all happened, putting those aside, we're now pretty organized and calibrated against it.
We'll give it a couple more minutes.
can start.
We'll go ahead and call the order of conference. Officer Ford Powell is in the office.
The call for all three meetings. Commissioner Bradley Hall.
Present.
Commissioner Solo.
Present.
Commissioner Harrington.
Present.
Vice Chairman Bailey.
Present.
And Chairman Jacob. We're.
Take a look at the table of contents. I guess
table of contents on the audit, I just wanted to call your attention to the management discussion analysis that starts on page 4, and that's where you can get a nice overview of the financial statements. It is quite lengthy in this regard. It's about 15 pages, but it's a wonderful overview of the audit compared to last year. I do want to point out that as of March 31, 2019, that's the picture and the snapshot of things continue. So to go over the numbers now as of March 31, I think is really relevant because I think Martha and Finance have the current financial projection for you. I did want to call your attention, though, that the management discussion analysis on page 4, and there are some key footnotes. If you look on page 25, just on the table of contents, I'm sure it starts the notes. The next item is page 58. So from 25 to 58 is footnotes, and that's where it's the detail. If you want to know what makes up your restricted cash, what it's restricted for, if you want to know your partnership, ownership, interest, and anything Austin affordable, it's in there. The notes receivable, the fixed assets, there's roll forward schedules. And the notes are really a lot of detail. It's a lot of words, but it's the detail that substantiates the numbers up front. And other than that, I'm going to turn it over to Sean for the single audit section, which really starts on page 72. And you can see it's only about 7 pages, 8 pages on the back half, looking at the MD&A. But it's really a key area that HUD is going to be concerned about, your compliance results. Sean?
Each year, part of the audit is on page 2 of the mega program, and it's chosen on a rotational basis. It requires just your high dollar amount every 3 years, but that's at least 50% of federal funds. So this year, our mega program is the Housing Choice Voucher program, and the grad and the next program. In addition to that, because you're government, you always have the best disbursement and payroll and your procurement contract and bid. And I'm going to go over some of the results of what I actually do each year on the audit. You might not have this presentation before. So for finance, we test disbursements, and this year we show the beginning disbursements to test. So we pull them based on high dollar checks, risky transactions, and then just the amount of that due. Of the 80, we tested, we had zero issues at all. Well, we're looking for the proper approval on all invoices. We should have people sign off on their fee. But all those invoices were allocated to the program to allow for each program. But they were coded off to make sure they weren't paid twice and things like that. And we had zero issues at all in the and of those $80 dedicated disbursements, we had over $19 million of six assets $19 million a year. We also looked at 22 payroll files. And what we do there is we're not testing whether that person deserves maybe an offer making or a good salary, or we're making sure that they're paid or approved to get paid for their personnel file. And that those are the three with financial records and the three wages that are on payroll. And you can have an issue there. Everyone has a problem with the job to be approved, everyone's making a proper wage. For procurement, we pull 7 bids in contract. And what we do there is we start with the RFP process. We make sure that everything is approved on that. You go out for it for bids, you advertise them, those advertise for a certain amount of days. The bids you got in were properly scored. It had a non-biased selection committee. And you know, we can't decide whether you chose the right vendor or not, but the scoring process you set out in that process, and you pick the right vendor, and we have no issue with it. For ACB, we look at 50 tenant files, and we're doing everything regarding this money. Or when the tenant comes in, you know, what should they bring? And the tenants that they're declaring on there are actually there, and we deserve to get deductions for it. And we double check all calculations regarding that, and make sure that the half payment paid by the employee is actually going on the calculated properly. And of the 50 files, we have 0 issues with all of them. None of the calculations weren't correct, the sections were all there, everything in the files needed to be there was there. In addition to that, what I told you about earlier, that even though we had no issues with it, we could actually cover three instances of a person made a small error, and the housing authority quality control actually caught that error before we looked at it and made the corrections to that. We like that even better than not finding anything, because it shows that the internal control process is working, which is one of the things we need to test for the market. We also test the waiting list, and this year we looked at 20 tenants or 20 applicants that were issued vouchers. And what we do there is we randomly select throughout the year people that were issued vouchers and see where they were on the waiting list, the time they were selected. And at this event, we look at 3 people above them and make sure. opportunity. So, number 21 on the waitlist was selected to choose a voucher. We asked why it wasn't number 18, 19, or 20 to choose a voucher. Most cases they were, sometimes they weren't, but they were not. They were notified and done that even. Something like that. We have no issues with all of that. And lastly, we tested for the first time 40 grant files this year across, you know, a sample of all these properties. And similar to voucher files, they have their own testing attributes, but the 40 files are tested. We have 0 to 0. So all that compliance testing that we tested, you know, takes 120 hours per time, about 4 people. We have little to no issues at all with compliance this year.
Question?
For certain areas. How does that work? For the standard file, we get a half register for 2 months, 1,000 years. And we will collect, you know, 25 from the month of December, 25 from the month of March. And we'll send
them go here.
For voucher, for second attempt, all of you. For the first attempt, we get a check going up before we were at high dollar. The most expensive test going out the door, grab all those. For construction, get that, just going to grab all of them as material. If we're going to have facilities, come back monthly payment, we'll grab one. And then, you know, we work down from there. We test 80. So I'm going to test 80 total of the surface we test this year. So 50 of them might have come from a high dollar amount. And then I might have seen, look down the list and saw things that I just was curious about. Pull 21 based on something I thought around 50. And then 10 more to grab. To make sure that nothing out of the ordinary would come from this.
In high dollar amount, would when you go in, do you have a certain amount that you would consider high dollar amount, or do you look like at all the look at all the disbursements, and then when you look at them, you look at high dollar amount?
For audit purposes, we have materiality testing that we do, and we calculate individually significant items. And anytime there's that dollar amount or higher, we're required to look at every single transaction going on the door of $1.5 million or higher, that's going to look at.
And that might only get us 30, it might get us 50. If it gets us 150, then we might raise that level to 50. And what is the level of materiality?
Well, high dollar amount.
Materiality comes into play for us in our opinion. If you remember this, reasonable insurance on material communication. So if there's a check for $2 million and you test it because we were random, then so we do a judgment, high dollars, and then measurement. We try and pick up risky areas. We kind of alluded to it, travel, even though things are a credit card, a current or credit card, and of course get tax of purchases.
Anything else?
Well, we do have funding, and it comes from the financial side related to journal entries. We already discussed it, but I know for a minute, and for the record, there is a corrective action plan. We think it's easily correctable. We think it's within the tolerable acceptance level of HUD review. And it definitely doesn't change your risk going into the future for next year, other than on the financial side. It's not related to compliance. It's not related to tenants. It's not related to landlord, payroll, employees. It's just an accounting adjustment, a journal entry to get the audit to be a little more accurate.
Any questions? So what effect are going forward somebody doing a deal with outside the market?
No, it should not. It should not.
Anything else?
Will management be monitoring this corrective action?
Yes. Well, management, absolutely. Mark, do you want to talk about that for
a yes, we've got very effective chit sheet here with our software and our people and our process and our policy and our movement. that's the new company that we're tracking every month, and we're reporting that to the company, and the website, and also the return to the policy software board. Any questions you need?
And we can certainly include that in our finance.
Right.
I'm looking forward to do this.
Yeah, it's hard on
what we've been doing.
Well, I think from the board, I think actually from the board, we don't like findings, but we're going to have one that doesn't seem to be terrible.
Right.
On. And also, I'm not going to be at the February meeting.
It's been great.
It was largely into the spring break. We had to do some spring break issue. So let me make note of February and March. The Commissioner Carrington, and we'll come back and end it with that strategy as we get around other days where there's some removal holes and other stuff with that. We'll see if we really need those meetings as well. We'll take a look. Maybe one of those becomes the optional meeting.
So we have March out here?
We've got to be in March, yeah. That's the only thing that we're doing. But maybe that works more. So we'll keep working on that. One of the struggles we had is giving AAC a closed deal for the things that you want to provide some predictability to the
market. But we have enough.
Preservation and clearance. on the 106 project. And we talked to the city preservation officer, and he said things were good. We talked to development services, they said all things were good. So some different folks just weren't talking to one another. And really credit this to Sylvia, who really for thanking him to have them all doing the initiative.
That would be your additional title.
Is there any reason that you know maybe in December or early? Is it being very nasty?
Yep.
Avoiding that they're putting their...
We've already started working on the online writing campaign, so we have draft circulating internally among staff to get that started. So they'll be hearing that first, and as part of that, that's too, we can talk about the city hall. I'm just excited if they want to participate.
Oh, they're anxious. And none of them are bigger than what they need. Some keep coming in, they'll be going to city hall, and they're anxious to know.
And Commissioner, we'll be speaking with the city about what board specific council meeting. It's usually that second or third week of February when they present all the 9%. I don't have their schedule in front of us, and we'll get that.
Oh, okay.
Well, so you'll know well in advance specifically what day. That's on Thursday.
Okay. And if we could get something out to them, you think, I was talking to Crystal earlier, and... is there,
we are having to exhaust our capital fund. After the day we closed our last record, we're having more capital funding, and then to go back to HUD. We certainly don't want that to happen. So before we close Lakeside, Jimmy Dale and his team were working hard to get a few repairs done in advance of the closing. So this is not a great picture. If you've been at Lakeside, you remember this was our old community room. It had a ceiling that it could tear up stuff, and it just needed some help. And so they've already completed, there's the before and the after. They've already completed all of this as pre-grad work, new floors, new VCT tiles we used to have, so new floors, new ceiling, new doors on those side closets. They did some work, they added a new front door, and they did some work in the kitchen. So sorry, work's already going to be late night. I look forward to being able to show off that, plus the additional grad work, which is going to be elevators and lobby work and new exterior doors, so more to come on late night.
What about this location of the tenant?
There is no way we have to use the tenant for like that hotel.
No, ma'am. So we're working around.
Yes. Go
ahead.
Those woods.
Next.
Rosewood.
Yep.
What's
going on?
Rosewood is technically next.
That was not a set-up question.
Yeah, I think we'll be ready to talk about Rosewood in the summer, more formally with the board. I think we'll do some individual meetings and talk about board concept. Nelson Partners and Carlton and Hockett have met several times about different designs to incorporate the changing of the historic preservation zone that was negotiated out by Customer Houston. And actually, when we were at Chalmers, the mayor asked Rosewood, and we said we think that that's nice, and the suggestion was to bring it forward. So I think we'll take that advice and try to bring it forward in the next couple of years. I think there's probably two phases to it, maybe three. And I think we've got to figure out sort of funding of it, but right now we've done some initial concepts on design. We want to get through the award of Texas for Chalmers West. And it also shows folks, how we can build this. And it also gives us a place to have folks move to if we schedule it right. So if all this were to work well, we go to get 9% tax credit for this year for Chalmers West. So they'd be awarded in July. We'd be able to then in the summer start to notice the community conversation around Rosewood and then go and put in an application for tax credits for Rosewood phase one in that following tax credit year. And as we stage the work for residents at Chalmers, at Rosewood, to then move to Chalmers West and not be significantly dislocated. It's still be relatively close to the community. So, you know, we're working on those sorts of things, but they're not quite ready for prime time, but it's really a question we can show you. If anyone's interested, we can show you some of the initial design concepts we're working through. It's on your point to do that.
Are we working on, or have we identified a champion to go to Rosewood?
We have Commissioner
Ring Residence School. I'm sorry, I missed that. I'm living over here. Really? No.
As you said, you had never.
Such a really good point, Commissioner, and I have reached out to the property manager to give some suggestions from her. Who might be a good ambassador. Much like we said, I know we can't replace the wonderful work that Mary Epstein has done, but someone similar in Everosmo, I think it's, yeah, it's just...
We want to replicate it.
Exactly.
We want to replicate it. And it's been critical. The work that Mary has done with the rest of the
players. And I know from the CEO.
Okay.
Anything else?
Good.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to jump over to the Austin Affordable PFC event. There's no business communication. I ask for the approval of the consent agenda, which is the board minutes for the meeting held on October 17th, 2019.
I have a motion for
Item number two is presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number 60, authorizing the issuance, sale, and delivery of multi-county housing revenue bonds for the community apartment, and authorizing the execution of Lurie's option to ensure that financing is provided.
Can I do
this
minute?
Wait a minute, I'll just pull the PFC.
Right, before we report.
William Cannon as one that really needs affordable housing.
So this is coming in right at some really good time. This probably is east of 35, just like not very good. We have 215 units. All will be serving area median income of 50% and below. We will have 1, 2, and 3 bedroom units. And our lender partner will be Redstone, and our equity partner will be Citibank. This will be the last time you see this property, because this is the last time we bring it to you. We are anticipating closing this probably in the second week of December.
Done a phase one on Norwood previously with a different that came to us because they love us so much. For the second phase, we're really excited because their first phase is always leased and occupied in the high 90s. There is a need for the second property. This is all 60% area median family income below. We have 222 units, 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, and our lender will be Citibank, and our equity provider will be Intercom. Just a couple of notes, LDG works tirelessly with the Neighborhood Association. They just have a couple of concerns about, with, because we border Rutherford Lane and Norwood Park Boulevard, they didn't want, they were a little concerned that we would have an entrance to the property on Rutherford Lane, which would increase the traffic. Mm-hmm. We are not. The entrance is going to be on Norwood Park Boulevard. We also, they wanted a little cosmetic stuff on the fence that borders Rutherford. They asked just that we provide some landscaping just for like noise control and beautifying the neighborhood. And LDG has been awesome working with them again, and they are very happy with this project. They were never against building, they just kind of wanted to be perfect out of it.
The other good thing about this too is in phase one, part of that shopping center where their phase one is built, is it's part of the Goodwill Center, which does a tremendous amount of training and education classes, which I know a majority of large portion of their families that live in phase one can walk across the street and basically attend some of those classes. And we anticipate that happening in phase two as well. I think this will be a tremendous site. There's great transportation in and around there, and it should appeal very, very good to our Section 8 holders as well. Hopefully we'll get some vouchers up, which I'm sure we will. We usually do. Yes. And I can't remember how many. Jake, do you know how many we have of our housing choice vouchers in phase one? Do you, by chance?
I don't know. I'm not on that property.
But I do know we do have a good amount of them. So.
Yeah, the Goodwill Center is right here in Walmart. Right here, there's a lot of retail around.
What's the date, Mr. Ben?
The acreage?
No.
I think potentially, but probably the gas probably.
Mr. Chairman, real estate is one thing. One thing that...
Very obvious question.
One question that I have is, just I don't want to put you on the spot, but we're trying to work on sort of branding, and the bridge name has been, the bridge at wherever, has been important to us. I wonder if there have been a lot of demands, and maybe have a conversation after this meeting to think about, could this property be, would be appropriate to name as a bridge at and we're trying to further our brand, but you may be too far down the path, but just a thought.
We can certainly have a conversation.
Great. Thank you, Dave. I've got one question. What's the difference in
everything
housing,
rather than
loans,
and
housing
government loans? Some lender, Citibank, is one of them there, that's on this particular transaction, they prefer reasons to have the economy structure that's appropriate. So essentially the same sort of debt instrument, just in style that the government will know just to be a use or view like that as a bonus.
I'm
not
sure I understand, but
it's not an
office.
It is treated as
an act
line. Exactly. Exactly. So they need or use it the same way it considers it public.
Over time. There's some ways to analyze that. But for now, I guess I would ask if this board for if they said they want the commissioner to volunteer. There's not more questions. Ask for a resident to motion.
The chair would just have control of me.
You are involved. remove the ball field.
How many does this mean, Ron, that you are closing this one down at the end of the year?
I think it's been like six and two refinances.
Six.
And the two more refinances.
Ron's at Fort Worth, doesn't he?
And there, Christmas tree in our office. And Bill. Yes, we closed there at our Granada in Fort Worth yesterday.
All right, I'm sitting back now with the county authority, the city of Long.
Yes, it's going to be a closed off of Fort Worth Corporation, per se.
Yeah. You have a first and a second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We are closed.
I didn't hear a first.
Sir, look at the man pocket, remember that, pocket, I won't call you the fear of the ACACTSA. The item number six, and we ask you bring up, is resolution number 2624, the commissioner's pocket. Approving resolution, also for the housing agency, NAAC to allow for the issuance of bonds and other actions necessary, discuss with close the bridge of training to the bonds.
Okay, you've heard more action request, and I've had a motion to approve. Resolution number 2624, we have a motion.
Yes. I mentioned before, the commitment we've made to NHT over the next 2 to 3 years is 15% of the units will be leased to our housing choice voucher holders.
What about 15%?
15%, which is about 63 units to be exact. We've seen that that's great. It's a large number. I think we've had a total of 3 voucher holders in our property right now. We're not issuing new vouchers, so that's going to be over on us. The day, the month that we close, that's going to be kind of a step back. We are advertising, we're working through the Census Department with our staff to continue to promote mobility. People are looking for places to go. And we're going to try and get very aggressive from January to be front and center on the orientation meetings and get the word out and put it under Section 8. It's already under Section 8. Hopefully the app that comes through will have this on there. And we just trust that word of mouth will expand it as well.
Is it actually a housing choice voucher or could it be a voucher?
It could be any voucher.
It could be any voucher.
Yeah, it could be Travis County. We can use, we've already opened up the marketing for Travis County housing as well. So their residents know that we're here. We can use their
voucher. What's the downside of this ramification if we're not able?
If they don't see improvement over a 3-year period, they could actually call them for $4 million note. Mm-hmm. And we'd have to pay that back, of which 80% of that would come from CDT and 20% of that would fall on us.
What's that part of the equity?
It came in as part of the equity.
Are we required to give an annual report to the grantor?
Quarterly.
But the good thing is it just sort of helps to reset your program and make sure you
stay within that range.
It helps to almost guarantee that you're going to the same, the maximum amount of money following
yeah.
there. And you wonder what the 99.9999% utilization. And what happens when issues with these new resolutions and uncertainty about the whole thing, sometimes we will go ahead and we'll just go over just a little bit. And going over just a little bit, that's when you put a shortfall. Mm-hmm. And it's by small amount. So by comparison, San Antonio was over by 1,000 one year, Houston was over by massive amounts. We're talking just so it does come up as a significant issue. But it means that we have to put a hold on issuing new vouchers until we talk to HUD and say, hey, we all agree on it. We can and then we can do it. That's what Sears was saying?
Thank you for me. Which is so when we are working with the city on the homelessness issues and things of that sort, these other organizations or nonprofits like community foundations, aren't they getting vouchers as well?
Many of them accept vouchers at their properties, but those are tenant-based vouchers that they'd be using. That is community, there's one property or two properties that we have private based vouchers.
We just have the finding community, we have one property we have to use after our starting with Carrot, and then one in Cannon. And then we have, but other than that, all their properties that have that are tax credits, they accept vouchers.
They accept vouchers, right? They don't receive vouchers. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out can we work with other agencies or organizations to try to get their people where we can get credit for vouchers as well.
Expansion, I will say that we just got yesterday we got 125 new Main Street vouchers. It was just finally individuals with disabilities. Also, we did work with some effective council governments with not utilizing all of their BASH vouchers.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked with HUD as well as DDA, and we reallocated 15 of those BASH vouchers that they weren't utilizing into the Austin area. So we're really, and then we also signed a new contract with Neighborhood Housing to administer home funds, another TBRA contract for about $650,000, and we'll help another 68 clients with homes. So we're very actively involved in trying to pursue whatever we can do.
Well, for the reporting, that's what I was wondering, whether or not we could use some of our partnerships and talk about what we're trying to do in order to obtain more vouchers that can be used at this property as well.
Yeah, there's no dual credit, if you will. We issue the vouchers,
yeah.
And it's great if those vouchers, they can go to that issue, they can come to a property like Casher, or anyone that's lost affordables, or really any property that the tenant chooses. But yeah, there's not really a way to get dual credit. It is kind of a win for us when the tenant chooses to come to an Austin affordable, not in corporation property, because then we're, that's providing a subsidy.
But to me, that there should be. What do you know, it's being open your door, they're trying to, many of these grants are also trying to encourage partnerships with all the various agencies. And so here we are doing that. And even though it may not be directly our voucher, we are assisting others who have vouchers to come to our properties, right?
Well, we're issuing the voucher. The leases department will issue the voucher.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they come to an Austin Affordable Housing Corporation property, that's kind of another win because we've issued and a unit gets leased and that helps pay the rent that covers our cost of the property. But it's also a win if they go to another property as well because then that family's found a place to call home. So we're utilizing our vouchers, which can be something that's community. Mm-hmm. There's not really a way that
I guess what I'm trying to do is to respond to the dictate that we have, that we have to provide 50% of your units here.
Uh-huh.
And what can we do to sort of use a dual credit to help fill that gap?
Oh, gotcha. So in that particular case, we're releasing a voucher, releases the voucher, and we encourage folks, and we'll encourage folks to take a hard look at the Asher, and you know, we'll work hard to try to get them into this property. And that's a public sign because leases have a government program. And it's also a private partnership win through Austin Affordable Housing Corporation in Haka and CDP and the National Housing Trust. So it's a win on both sides. But it's a little funky because we've got to sort of keep the government sort of separate.
We can't steer people to a particular property. We have to, with the voucher rule, we have to just make all of the abilities of what's available known to the
theory we shut
them. Okay. And what we do is we market all of the Austin Affordable Housing properties through our vouchers.
And NHC comes and will fly down here once a year in person. And I think with what we've just said here can be part of a bigger picture of the story that says we may not be meeting 15% right now, but by including our partners here and our partners here, we're opening up these doors to make them not only aware of this property, but all our other property. And so we should get some sort of a past credit, some sort of a good mark for a bigger global picture, not just don't focus on this, we can all these good things that this will be.
Because in the long term, that's better for us because we are marketing and once we are partnering with all these other agencies, it's got to be a little bit better.
Yeah, when I say as a lawyer, that's probably not the word. And I suspect we have conflicts that we have to be careful of, such as who we recommend as our building.
We have to make them aware of all the available options.
We don't want any fair housing
issues. We have to try to, encourage them to options.
Yeah, but I'm not interested in any wink-wink, nod-nod,
chat. And believe me, there are so many protections between the apartment association, Rio Grande Valle, and you. I give a big shout out to the disability rights folks. We want those to have strong voices and representation to make sure that fair housing laws are followed. We fully disclose that, Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, which is part of HACA, has a number of properties. Here's Suzanne Schwartner, who to tell you about these properties if you're interested. But there's a whole bulletin board full of properties on the first floor. That's right.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I just think what we're dealing with fair housing and HUD and everything we need to do.
Mr. Chairman, if I could share with the board, change subjects for just a second. We're going to continue to spend time on this document, which I think is really important, and we'll continue to back up on it. We made the additions to it, and you all require it. If you look at it under acquisition and preservation, you'll know that we have added the AHC low and high rents. We also, below under new construction and under construction projects, we listed the percentage complete of the projects, so you'll see that. You'll also see a key to the development companies and partners. LDG is incorrect. It's not only the development group, it's actually
Lechner
Dishinger group. So Chris Dishinger is the partner that you've met from the firm. Lechner is the other partner. But it was nice to think it was included as well. For years and years.
Okay.
Because they basically moved up to Kentucky and they moved to we're going to continue to refine this. I would ask you to keep looking at my hope is that in the board book, we will be able to send it to you. We have Ken Bonden has worked, and Yoda's worked on the same. So, great job. Thank you for making it attractive.
Yes. Well,
So the things that we have not added to this document are the economic impact. So we're going to keep working on that. And I think we'll probably provide a resource to you all with a one-pager from Audrey Martin once we get that. She's kind of working through that. The second thing is we were asked to put it on the website. And we're uncomfortable with that because it's a management tool. We may put the map on, but we're probably not going to put this management information on. But we'll continue to work through that with you all. But expect to see it added, you'll see your board books, and we'll get it to you. But it really is a management tool kind of thing that hopefully will help you all, and it's helping us. But ask that you just kind of hold it for us.
Shouldn't we put in what we always say, et cetera, on the website, should we?
It's
probably the case that we usually talk about it in terms of total, right, rather than individual property.
Yeah. It's not a big secret. We're a public agency. We're transparent. But, we did some things for y'all to compile it in one major place. And, our staff purpose would be to be aware that it's a little more sensitive. And again, we have planned that we're some last support, we'd be able to survive. So, but here it is, and hopefully you all will know.
I think this is wonderful.
Properties themselves
are on the most affordable website. Right. And keep that up to date in terms of what's there in terms of construction. And there was another thing that demographic profile of properties. I cannot remember. I know that you've been doing that and keeping it up to date.
Yes, ma'am.
But does that appear monthly?
So your number of voucher holders per property?
Yeah.
Are monthly. Your cash flows that we make cumulatively and monthly are done monthly. The reduction in any principals that we loan balances are done monthly on the report. Our rent comparable to the market is broken down in much more details in the monthly report.
Right.
That's done monthly. Your debt coverage ratio is done quarterly. The demographics are done quarterly.
That's what I was thinking of. I understand.
You will have those coming.
But those include not only ethnic and racial breakdowns, but also by job care, career areas or something like that.
We do it by job, and we also do it by income levels from 30, how many we serve?
Yeah, income levels
are
probably even better.
Yes.
We haven't known.
Well, we're technically not allowed to collect that data.
Okay. But careers we can.
We can tell you the number of children. Because we do have some very heavily populated children's properties versus adult properties.
And that might be interesting to know too. Because what we try to do, I think, is diversify. Mostly we were dealing with more children, and then we started looking at singles and things of this sort. So the fact that we're responding to that need, I think, is quite important as well.
That's correct.
Anything else, Commissioner?
Last time we had a presentation session possible action regarding resolution number 2623, an operating budget revision for fiscal year 2020. Why do you have the one picture? So every year, of course, we do a budget revision. And it reflects the fact that largely that we only book 9 months of our revenue without looking at the client corporation. And also because we don't really have a good handle on exactly how much money is going to come in from Ron Kowal. So each year we make an adjustment and we also look at other expenses and costs that we have. This was last this year's, and Martha, you want to present this?
So the main thing I'm going to call out with a lot of these are that the net tax rate, the tax for the transfer from one year into two to another year of the city, the balance of the dollars and things is allowed. The largest
dollar amount is something that we've chosen to show the budget in prior years. Without the contract, half amount meant to the SAT, so that's the amount that comes in. Strategies we have been tested to other agencies and have. If you're going to look at your audit report on page 15 of the audit report, it says that last year we made a change. You can't see it, but in 2017, 2018, I don't know if you recall from the audit discussion, there's a big chunk of our revenue. There's two bar charts, revenue is here and then the next year and right here. So that was something that the auditor said we should be showing the revenue on our report. So one of our objectives in simplifying is to make the budget and audit. We've had complete discussion on the rules on how the budget be shown in a particular way.
But you're required to show the 2 years to show the difference.
Right. So the audit report shows 2 years, and in here we show that the balance that is approved by the board back in April, and then the budget revision is when that amount is 3.3 million. So the largest amount, we're kind of increasing revenue by 433 million and increasing expenses by 429 million. That's just so we look more like our audit report on page 15, which shows all the revenue and expenses we make there. Most of them are passive and business. So for the presentation change mainly, and that will over time and simplify the way we present the number of reports that we prepare. So
does that make sense?
Well, I'm trying to make sense of it.
So the idea of the pass-through, just at the basic level, is we received half the assistance payments to Michael Cummings' shop, Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. They get hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars every year. But those funds then get turned over to owners and operators of project-based Section 8 property. So they're passing through our books,
right?
Because we administer them and issue checks to those owners.
Where are you making the check for the areas?
Yep, HUD gives us a chunk of money. Uh-huh. We put it in our account, and then we take that money and we turn almost all of it over to the owners and operators, and we take a small amount as an administrative fee.
Right.
And the administrative fee is the thing that we value so much because we a lot of unrestricted cash for us to buy property as well. A similar thing happens in Lisa's program. She gets about $45 million in pass through, half funding that goes and is put it from HUD, dumped into an account at HACA. HACA then goes and issues that to landlords to provide Section 8 housing. In that case, though, we don't take a little bit of administrative fee because HUD actually has a separate account called administrative fee that they give us. So, and that's all we get there. So it's a little different, but those two half accounts for pass-through comprise, 80%+ of our budget. That's a huge amount.
Right. So So that's all the revenues coming in, and then we show all the expenses coming out. So we're just trying to make it look the same. And that'll actually simplify our reports. Even our bandwidth that makes probably producing reports that are a little different that net can think about.
Now, are we using the word pass through in the explanation or description of anything?
Yes. So if it's in bold, it might count. So that's just maybe what happens after you look at our. So the next big change on our first the second line, the SACC is the contract extension, which we always show. So that's really the big story.
That's the
end of our contract. January 1, 2020 extension. We're not going to sell the other price this year. Next year, there's an estimate there anyway, and we have to extra development fees and then for the rest. This is a big item for us. It's pretty normal.
It's basically the one to do this, and really it's just a plus, an adjustment that has to be made because of the way SACC contracts. You know, we've had more certainty. We've always looked at 9 months of revenue for SACC, so we've historically come back to you all.
And we've done that every year.
We've done that for a number of years. Yeah. So we're coming back now, and now, because of the return of MORs, we're even getting more money. So the amount of revenue coming in is $4.8 million. And then you see a bunch of accounting adjustments, revenue adjustments, things that were done when we prepared for React inspection, needed temps and other kinds of things. So it's just sort of the two-thirds of the year.
Yeah, the big news is the contract. Extra development fees that wasn't projected in the coming this year for AAC is going to be pushed off the schedule.
And at the end of the day, the grant total that we add to our budget is $3.3 million. Now this does not include the one thing that we're asking for your permission to adopt this budget. We also generally in the past talked about some kind of a potential bonus for staff at Christmas time. That bonus is not reflected in here. If you all wanted to provide a one-time bonus at Christmas for the staff, I would recommend a $500 bonus, which would be plus we had in the taxes, so we get $100 check that people would get. And that would mean that this number, $3.345 million, would be reduced by roughly $180,000. So that's the... We've done a thousand in the past. We did 500 at the summer for tax-free weekend.
Yeah.
And then we did... it's been a little tight. It's been a little tight of the year. So I'm going to just today recommend... 500 netted up, so that puts us at 150,000. It would be 360,000 if we were to 350,000 if we were 1,000. And I think that's just a little
tough. Well, last year we did not give 500 during the summer.
We did.
We did.
Yeah.
So we are, in fact, reducing it by 500. In terms of the bonus, total bonus.
I think we've tried to tell staff we don't know, we're playing year by year. But this year in total, staff will receive $1,000 in bonuses. I think given more uncertainty this year about the contracts, there's some political instability and HUD and other things.
I think they will understand that. I'm just trying to.
Yeah.
I'm stating this for my benefit, not but for their benefit, what we do is remind them about the $500 for the tax that we get and the Christmas bonus.
I think it's a gift.
You can remind people that they got a gift.
Well, yeah.
But that's not included in this.
So we would have to allow
that.
But we need to do that today.
Well, we did it last time. We made it white till we put it in there at Christmas. I made it that way. Remember?
I know. I didn't want to.
My
anxiety level, if I were a staff member, would be. Because if I needed that money, it would be kind of high.
That's not true. First, let's go ahead and take care of this.
Right.
Any other questions on the amendment to the budget? Do I have a motion to approve it? Second. I have a motion by Commissioner Stoller to approve it. Second by Hall. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it.
Is that inclusive of the...
No.
Okay.
That would be a separate motion.
Yeah.
And we're not going to wait for this.
Only the executive team and we'll know where it came from.
I'm not saying for it.
I'll move that you say all of our employees, including executive service. My motion is to provide a one-time $500 bonus, Christmas time bonus, for all the employees, also that of all of our instances.
I'll second.
That's a motion, second.
Okay.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Do you need me to grasp that motion before you got it?
That means the checks will be available.
Yes, it'll be.
To be handed out at some
point. A couple of things I want to share with you. So, coming up on the agenda. So, thank you all for that. That was very, very nice. And then we'll celebrate Christmas party at the board meeting next month. Right afterwards, we'll do our cooking caroling reception. We'll have a great song for you.
Are
we going to
have songs?
Absolutely. Don't you love it?
I
do. Me too.
I do too.
Let us know what they think of
it. I love it. I said, you have to go over this. All of them? Not
maybe. No. So the Thanksgiving turkey dinner handout with the Park Association is next Tuesday, the 26th. We'd love to have some board members come. It's going to be at George and Air at 12 noon. It's a great opportunity to pass out turkeys and all the fixings donated by the Park Association. And I will confess that morning I've got a little girl who's having some sinus surgery, so I'm not going to be able to meet her, most likely. So we'd love to have some board members there to wave the flag and thank the Park Association. We usually bring out 50 people and a whole bunch of hockey staff there. It's really one of the nicest. So keep that in mind, we've got time next Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's George Manor up north. The holiday lunch for hockey was selected by the staff. The Employee Recognition Committee, but ERC. And they selected this year to do it, you know, go to the chat. And so they would like to, and employee donations, pick some hockey, support that. We have entirely paid for it. If you all would like to go, we would love to have you come. Another year. It's on 6 at 11:30. And I think some of you have seen the big pictures that we take with all the staff. We're going to meet at 11 o'clock that morning and take at Lakeside and take pictures of all the staff in front of Lakeside. And if you all would like to come, we'd love to have you come.
Also,
some of the channels right there at 4th and between Red River, no, or Trinity, and
So where do you park for us?
If you can, you park wherever you can, and we'll reimburse you for your park. In fact, you can go to the restaurant and get that one. So you all can park there. No problem. Staff can park in the
Parking,
staff are
that's
tremendous.
Our parking staff is tremendous.
Yep.
But there will be some availability
in the later time. Absolutely. So come join us, and we'll send you more. Nitty will send you more information about that. For January, for the board meeting, Tyler reminded me, and I think it's something to me that we need to just overdue and do. It's been a couple of years since our last board election, who has what position and who does what for which subsidiary. The issue that's come up is that Tyler is oftentimes signing the documents for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, but she is still in the chair, and still in the she. Engaged with the
other side of the deal. The primary procedure issue is that a chair does not make a motion or second motion. And that's what I had been doing, not paying too attention. And then I realized a few months ago that this is all wrong. If I'm still listed as the chair, then I cannot make motions. So I've been avoiding that the last 2 or 3 months for those two positions.
So on the recommendation of council, I think it makes sense to do a cleanup of that as well as other board governance issues. So we'll look to go ahead for elections in January. Think about if there's a position you're too interested in, to try to talk to folks beforehand to get a sense of who might be in which chair. And that obviously rests squarely with the board. I would say that some positions are a little more, we hope would provide a little stronger oversight than others. You know, Southwest Housing Compliance has always sort of been right on the edge of having some issues, and that could be a more intensive kind of thing if we get to rebids, and I have to say, well, yeah, there's some issues there. And also, Affordable Housing Corporation has some issues as well, just kind of getting into the weeds of the deal. So, just think of that up. The last thing is, 2 months ago, you heard from Melanie Villalobos, and she came and did the strategic planning session with us. She's done some great work. We got, I think we did a pretty extensive staff, series of staff meetings. We're going to do another one on December 5th or 6th. And then I think we'll be ready to come back to you all with a set of 7 strategic goals and some clear items that we believe would be important for us to be working on in the next 3, 5, 7, 10 years. That are actionable, measurable, and advanced those goals. I was pleased to see that Brian had in his packet a mention of strategic plan, and I think that all of those things are in there. In fact, really kind of shout out to Sylvia. She identified the issues for succession planning as an item that were included in our strategic plan. So, but as far as new development that we're working on, software, and new goals and objectives, additional training, staff turnover with career development, new initiatives, everything from environmental sustainability to attracting and retaining talent, workforce, equity, diversity, inclusion, all the regular stuff you'd expect to see on self-sufficiency and resident opportunity and expansion of affordable housing. All that's in here. And so the next board meeting, Melanie's going to come back and kind of walk us through that and make sure that the board's in agreement with the December. So,
December, Jay.
December. That'll be December.
Nice.
So, expect to see that. So, a lot could happen in December, a lot more people. So, I think that's all I've got for today. Thanks for coming out here to the Asher.
Wednesday.
Oh, the official approved calendar. We're going to, unless they want to get through and close their office, take a walk on Wednesday next week.
And that's embedded possible?
I think so.
I just want to tell everybody that our new shopping center, Arlen's shopping center, which was in this closet for a long time, recently sold. And it was taken over by Boca Loca, who went in and did massive renovations to the inside, and it's absolutely remarkable. And it's been a big draw to the community. But tonight, they are giving away 800 turkeys from 5 to 7 o'clock. But there's going to be ATV will be out there, and security will be out there.
They're going to hand out tickets.
But it will be doing back to school bashes and things that we used to do. We know exactly what it's going to turn into. So we do have a little bit of concern, but it's a very nice gesture to give out that many turkeys at one time.
I think it's five to seven. So we are going to go
observe that a little bit. And that's all being paid for and divided by the owner, who's a fantastic guy. But he's been doing a lot of those things. Give back. He gave away $250 gift cards to the first 200 people that came into the store at the grand opening. He's done a lot of that. He's back. So it's been very, very well received. we still have several communities that live in the village that work
in this work.
But with that being said, I just want to let you know that there's going to be a massive turkey drive being held.
Yeah, I'm worried about the traffic because, number one, it's rush hour. Number two, ATC classes, the evening classes, and all the rest, I don't even want to think about it.
And it's going to impact some of our tenants that have, you know, it's, you know,
probably the EDDI or the
most out of the way. I'm sure they're all made aware.
Everyone's been made aware of it.
They've got a permit.
They have a permit. I mean, it's done, so there'll be a very heavy city presence. But anyway, it's going to be a massive thing. I don't know how it's going to go.
Well, we can
buy it.
You're going to want to turn.